Hey, what's going on, everyone? It is Wednesday, September 20th, 2023. Welcome to your latest edition of Wednesday Night Dynamite. I am Don Tony, as always. I want to thank you very much for joining me. If you saw the preview for tonight's episode and the little player that pops up, where you could actually play the episode, you already know that this episode is a little bit shorter than usual. It's not that we don't have a lot to talk about in the world of AEW, NXT, and everything that is not Raw and SmackDown. It's just the fact that since Saturday, we must have recorded about 9 hours of audio. And rather than do your typical recap and reviews for NXT and AEW, I want to have a few discussions tonight. Of course, I'll give you some overall comments with regards to last night's NXT, which had some really good high points, had some kind of corny low points, and I have the ratings. And for those that are wondering, did Becky Lynch draw big 2 weeks in a row? I got news for you. When we get into the ratings, I think you might be a little bit surprised as far as how the numbers came about. Let's just say that there were at least four or five different quarters that scored higher than Becky Lynch. I kid you not. A certain dirty one dominated NXT once again, something that we've talked about in the past. We're also going to talk about two wrestlers that are gone from NXT. We had this discussion earlier in the year around WrestleMania time, Stand and Deliver time. It is now pretty much done. They were actually taken off TV about a month before their contract expires, and I think that actually was a good idea for WWE purposes. We'll get into that in a little bit. And I also want to have a little bit of a discussion with regards to AEW ticket sales. You know, tonight they are actually going to be at Arthur Ashe Stadium, about 15 minutes from where I live. And yes, I was invited to go, and I really wanted to go, especially when someone that you're friendly with works within AEW. But unfortunately, the timing was impossible. I'm actually recording this in the afternoon on my lunch hour. And the reason being is because later on this evening, I got to meet with a few customers who cannot see me until they get out of work, which is after 5 p.m. By the time I would have gotten back, shit showered and shaved and get to Flushing, Queens, that would have been crazy. Then by the time I get home, there would have been no way I could have recorded this episode. Would have had to wait to Thursday and just throws things out of sync. So the next time they're in my neck of the woods, you best damn believe that I'm going to make arrangements in advance to make sure that I can make it. But, you know, the big topic, if you follow a lot of social media, I mean, CM Punk, the situation with him is starting to die down. You have some people making some direct and indirect comments. Jericho just did an appearance on Busted Open, and I'll read you a little comment that he made there. Tony Khan dodging the topic altogether. Totally understandable, but the response that he gives just comes off goofy. Although I have to give him a little bit of props for something that he did do with regards to the CM Punk situation, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But the ticket sales are a big deal. It's a big topic of conversation. And yes, you know, the Wembley, I don't call it a fiasco, because if you sold 80,000 tickets still and 72,000 showed up, that is still unbelievable for AEW. That is incredible. All right, yeah, it doesn't pass WWE WrestleMania, you know, unofficial records, but, you know, that's still tremendous. But you see that obsession online that AEW has to be bigger than WWE in some kind of stats for bragging rights, and it gets a little disturbing. And especially when you see now all of the media that has gone on over the last week with regards to AEW. And I'm not going to name individual names, but nobody who is conducting these interviews are bringing up Wembley. I mean, as far as I know, I haven't seen any recaps. It would be obviously front page headlines if somebody did. I mean, people are being very, very soft about this because, you know, you know how it is. You know the deal. But you know what? I got to give props to Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics. You know, he looked at some bigger wrestling events over the years. And for those out there, because I made a claim last week that, you know, caused a little stir amongst my viewers and listeners, I said that I truly believe that they could have sold 81,000 tickets and had about 8,500 no-shows, 8,800 no-shows. And people are like, are you crazy? There's no way that they would have almost 10%, 11% no-shows. That's not actually accurate. WrestleMania 37, night one and night two, had between 10 and 11% of no-shows. That is legit. You know, you got to understand, when you have smaller venues, a place that has, let's say, seats 10,000 people, you sell 10,000 tickets and 9,000 show, you know, that 1,000 number doesn't sound all that big. So now multiply that by 10, and why, you know, because you say to yourself, how could 8,000 people just decide, oh, you know, people, you know, cannot make it, they get sick, they have to work, you know, things just get screwed up, they can't find a babysitter, you know, they just got there late. You know, scalpers, people who bought it. And listen, you know, there's accusations that Tony Khan bought crazy amounts of tickets to inflate those numbers. My friend, that has been a conversation for years. You know, for those that don't recall it, Brian Alvarez stirred that shit up 2 years ago in November of 2021. And made the accusation that some people within WWE believe that Tony Khan buys up loads of tickets to falsely inflate AEW numbers. Because AEW has had some events, not just All In, that had some pretty big percentages of no-shows. There was a show recently, I think Jim Cornette and Brian Last talked about it earlier this week, where there was like almost a 20% no-show. So, you know, it's not a publicly traded company. Tony Khan can do whatever he wants. There's no way to prove if he buys boatloads of tickets or if he doesn't. You know, when you talk about the turnstile at Wembley, understand if you get comped, you still go through the turnstile. So, you know, if you're going to give away 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 tickets to local TV stations and radio stations and stores in the UK Wembley area, you know, for publicizing All In, you know, and they are able to give away those tickets, you show up, you go through the turnstile just like anyone else. That's on AEW's books as far as the tickets bought. So it's not as controversial as it sounds, guys. It really isn't. But realize that the discussion in the last 2 weeks since has been about a lot of AEW's house shows, Collision, Rampage, Dynamites, having low ticket sales. In fact, when you look at Wembley, 2 years ago, Wembley had like, what, 20,000 people. Last year, it had about 12,000 people approximately. I don't know the exact amount. This year, as of 24 hours ago, they had like 7,000. And in my neck of the woods, some local radio stations have plugged it during the week. AEW had a buy one, get one free deal. You could get pretty damn good tickets for tonight's show at Arthur Ashe Stadium for $30. And you get a second ticket for free. Any money made is better than no money made. And I've always said that I have no problem with them, any wrestling company, cutting prices last minute, trying to get people in there. You know, I mean, for some reason, it's a laughing game for a lot of people out there. But here's what I wanted to reveal to some of you guys. You know, the talk over the last 2 weeks about a lot of shows not selling all that well, that has been the annual tradition for AEW the last 2 years. It happened in 2021. It happened in 2022. The only reason why we do not count 2019 and 2020, really, you know, 2019 is the beginning of AEW, and they were not touring like they are now, but 2020 was COVID. I mean, we had COVID for a couple of years, but in 2020, full-blown COVID, things were much different. And even if you did have some shows late in the year, you still, people were very, very nervous going into big events with a lot of people. So you really can only compare to 2021 and 2022. And, you know, in 2021, you know, the low ticket sales in a lot of venues, you know, you had people accusing WWE of people claiming that Tony Khan scoops up tons of tickets. Then you had other people, you know, saying, wow, it's a little disturbing, AEW, low ticket sales compared to the year before. If you go to 2022, October, November of 2022, a lot of shows, Jason Solomon's, the Jim Cornette, a whole bunch of shows did big episodes about, and here's the title, AEW's Poor Recent Ticket Sales. I actually, for a little refresher, watched a few minutes of Jim Cornette's October 5th, 2022 podcast where he talked about it. But what did 2021 and 2022 have in common with 2023? Not just the fact that a whole bunch of events are not selling well. You see the pattern? October, November, September. It's the latter part of the year when the weather gets cooler. Kids go back to school, you know, your schedules change, you got football season. There are a lot of factors as to why fans will not go out as much earlier in the summer months. You know, even in the spring months, attendance is a pretty damn good because, you know, you're just breaking out of the winter season. Winter sometimes is not fun to leave the house, you know. Sometimes you just want to get out for a little while, but if you see the pattern with AEW the last 3 years, it's always between September and November. So this time around, and I'm not defending AEW, I'm not criticizing AEW, all I'm saying is that for everybody who is really going overboard with it right now, understand that this has been going on for multiple years, and it's the same time period every single year. Now, Dave Meltzer, in his most recent Observer, posted a whole bunch of ticket sales for upcoming AEW events. And listen, everybody that favors their favorite will always inflate numbers a little bit. If they could get somebody on record to increase a number for a company that they support, they will do it. Case in point, All In. Case in point, All In. You know, whatever they were told, you know, because they were really supporters of AEW, they went with it. You know, you don't think that some of these bigger journalists out there, you don't think that they thought to themselves, you know what, I should go to get a Freedom of Information request and verify that this number is true. No. As long as it beat WWE's all-time number, yeah, we'll run with it. And if it ends up being wrong, hey, we were just reporting what we were told. Isn't it funny how people do not do the research when they want a certain narrative pushed? But once that narrative is challenged, then suddenly they do the research. So these numbers that he put out are obviously a little bit inflated. Now, keep in mind, though, that some of these ticket sales were posted about a week ago. So some numbers have gone a little bit up. But just understand, the numbers still are very disturbing because, you know, the numbers are a lot lower than what they were in 2022. They're a lot lower than what they were in 2021. People in the Atlanta area already talking about, hey, AEW's doesn't seem to be coming here again. You know, things with Canada. You're not going to see that kind of tour in Canada the way they did it before. In fact, with California, they're not touring California like they did before, and especially with what's going on with Los Angeles and their ticket sales, you're going to see them cut back on a lot of areas. You know, people also, you know, complain like, oh, they keep going back to Chicago. They keep going back to New York. Listen, of course you don't want to only draw 8,000 people to Arthur Ashe. The building's expensive. It seats a lot of people. You know, you don't want a venue that looks half full. So, of course, it is a disappointing number. Still, you get 8,000 people to show up. That's a great number. The thing is, though, is now, and this is something that I truly believe, Brian Solomon, online, a journalist that I honestly respect. He's been in the game for a very long time. He made this comment last week, and it's a comment that you and I talked about years back with TNA when we used to make fun of them touring baseball stadiums and drawing 150 people in a 5,000-seat building. Now, that's an extreme example. But Brian Solomon last week said AEW should start considering booking venues that are much smaller. Because, believe me, you'd rather have 5,000 people in a 6,000-seat arena than 5,000 people in a 15,000-seat arena. You know, that was one of the big problems with TNA for a very long time, and it wasn't just baseball stadiums. They were booking these tremendous... And listen, in some markets, you know, they don't have on every corner, like a 7-Eleven or a gas station, there's arenas where you have a whole plethora, plus... You know, a lot of stadiums have events already booked. So your, you know, choice of what you want to do and where you want to do it is very limited in some areas. So you got to keep that in mind as well. People just look at location and number and think that that's it, and there's a lot more to it. You know, I don't want to get into it today, but, you know, the big funny running thing going on online in the last 24 hours is that Ari Emanuel, Triple H, and Vince McMahon had a meeting with the company, and Vince McMahon made a remark that WWE started going stagnant, and that's why they pulled this deal. Now, yes, some of that was tongue-in-cheek humor, but everybody online, you know, that wants to use this as a talking point is like, oh, what are you talking about? Record number of sales. Did you see how many tickets they sold for Survivor Series and Royal Rumble and WrestleMania? I got news for you. You see a lot of the financials that have come out. That's for last year. That's for earlier this year. They are selling out big venues for big events because a lot of fans believe Roman Reigns will be there. A lot of fans believe Cody Rhodes will be there. A lot of fans believe the Bloodline will be there. The Judgment Day will be there. And a lot. So they're confident that they're going to get big-time, you know, cards on these shows. And WWE, over the last 18 months, their track record of putting on really strong premium live events, you know, it gives you a lot of confidence that, hey, you know, even though they haven't announced the card or the storyline has developed yet, I know I'm more than likely I'm going to get a fucking kick-ass show. But you see a little bit closer over the last couple of months, house shows attendance is starting to chop down a little bit. Ratings are starting to chop down a little bit. As I brought up on, I think it was Patreon yesterday, you know, NFL has opposed Raw for decades, and Raw was never this low, you know. And of course, when you have YouTube and you got other streaming media, if wrestling is not, like, let me drop what I'm doing and watch it, people will be like, you know what, I will watch the NFL and I'll just go check it on YouTube. Look at me. You know, maybe a year ago I would have been like, there's no way I'm doing a Wednesday Night Dynamite in the afternoon. I gotta watch AEW first. I gotta talk about it. I gotta give my review. And for me, it's not urgent must see at that very moment live. And, you know, that is very, very important for TV deals, networks, advertisers, investors, the promotions. So when you're becoming the second and third option during a live broadcast, there's problems. And there are going to be some negative numbers coming out for WWE in the future. You know, so everybody online having fun with Vince's remark, believe me, you know, 3 to 6 months from now, you're going to hear a couple of negative numbers. And remember, I brought that up. So, you know, there's a lot that we don't know behind the scenes with financials. But getting back to Dave Meltzer with AEW, listen to some of these current ticket sales for upcoming AEW events. Collision. Collision. Grand Rapids, Michigan, for this coming Saturday, the 23rd. As of right now, they only sold about 2,200 tickets. Dynamite, next week in Broomfield, Colorado, has only sold approximately 1,900 tickets. October 4th, Dynamite in Stockton, California, has only sold 2,150 tickets. Collision for October 7th in Salt Lake City has only sold 1,670 tickets. Dynamite for October 10th in Independence, Missouri has only sold 1,496 tickets. October 14th's Collision in Toledo, Ohio has only sold 1,645 tickets. I mean, and it continues. There's not one venue other than Full Gear that has a decent audience presale, and even that number is low. Let me continue. October 18th, Dynamite in Rosenberg, Texas, currently has only sold 1,890 tickets. October 25th, Dynamite in Philadelphia has sold 2,177 tickets. October 28th, Collision in Uncasville, Connecticut. Believe it or not, actually, was thinking about going because that's at Mohegan Sun that I go every year. As of right now, it's only sold 1,945 tickets. That arena, I think, sits, what, 7,000 to 10,000? November 1st, Dynamite in Louisville, Kentucky has only sold 1,345 tickets. November 17th, Collision in Los Angeles has sold 2,990 tickets. That building, I think, seats 20,000. And Full Gear on November 18th in Los Angeles, as of right now, has sold 6,911 tickets. Montreal, December 5th and December 6th. Right now, they've only sold between 3,000 and 4,000 tickets. That number is a much lower number compared to even a year ago. And, you know, you cannot spin it any way other than what's being reflective on TV. The big problem that is happening, and you see it, you know, with the Bloodline storyline, you see it when, you know, The Rock made an appearance, you see it with, you know, certain individuals, is you have to try to generate new fans. And there are millions and millions and millions of wrestling fans that still watch wrestling. The thing is, though, is you got to do something to convince those fans to spend money on your product, to tune into your shows live, to buy a pay-per-view. You know, with WWE, premium live events are much different because you subscribe to Peacock, pay $5 a month, $10 a month, depending on if you want ads or not, and you get to see a pay-per-view. With AEW, you got to spend $50, $60. And now there's a lot of reports going around that AEW is going to increase their pay-per-view schedule next year. So that means fans are going to almost every month have to dish out $50, $60, $70. And what does that do with regards to storylines? You know, here's one of my biggest problems with AEW that I've talked about for a long time. When you see blood all the time, you become numb of it. You become numb. It doesn't feel as big or as special anymore. When you see four-star matches, high-flying, clusterfucks, train wrecks, whatever you want to call it, comedy matches, and you see it over and over and over again, they don't feel special anymore. They don't stand out anymore. And, you know, when you have an indie wrestling promotion, because trust me, I worked, even though I was crappy, I worked, you know, for what, 5-6 years with indie wrestling promotions, doing a manager, working behind the scenes and stuff like that. When you booked an indie wrestling event, you would always try to put like one or two marquee matches on the billboard to be the draw, to get people to decide, hey, honey, what are you doing this weekend? Nothing. Oh, you want to go to check out some wrestling? Oh, so-and-so is going to be coming to town. Oh, yeah, let's go. You know, but wasn't heavily storyline driven. As long as from the time the show starts to the time the show ends, if you give an entertaining show, the people go home happy, but they don't talk about your product a week later, 2 weeks later. The next time they talk about your product is when the next billboard comes out and you advertise who's going to be showing him. Frank Goodman, the mass maniac, you know, who I give a lot of credit for. I mean, he used to have 6-hour shows, and wrestlers for decades did shoot interviews making jokes about Frank Goodman's marathon shows. I was part of a lot of them, as a fan and involved. And believe me, they are tiring by the time the show is over. But you got your damn money's worth. You know, you look at some of their bigger events and even the Chris Candido Memorial shows, the two that they had and the one that I was on doing the managing. You look at that card. You got CM Punk on that card. You got the New Age Outlaws. You got Tommy Dreamer. You got Sandman, Raven. Oh, my God. There's countless people that are on those shows. The first show that I ever did on camera, we had Abdullah the Butcher and others. So you put big names and you would have 6-hour shows because there would be something on there for someone to want to show up. But a week or two after the show was over, you didn't think about it anymore because it wasn't heavily storyline driven. And sure, AEW has storylines. Of course they have, but they're not storylines where, you know, you use the Bloodline for an example. And yes, it's a little bit unfair to compare the Bloodline to AEW. But understand that when people were saying, oh, this is cinema, this is amazing, this is the greatest storyline they've done in decades since the NWO or this, whatever they wanted, however people viewed it. If you list people's top 10 favorite memories of the Bloodline storyline over the last couple of years, almost everything in the top 10 would not involve a wrestling match. It would involve things that you saw on TV. When we talked about the ratings on Monday's show, and we talked about SmackDown's rating from Friday, and there were three other events this year that had almost an identical rating from Friday. And those shows were advertised what the things were in advance. And they weren't just regular SmackDown shows. It was Roman Reigns' 1,000-day celebration. It was the trial of the Tribal Chief. It was the go-home to the Royal Rumble. So you have special episodes. And again, look what I just said. The trial of the Tribal Chief and Roman celebrate 1,000 doesn't even involve a match. So when you see all this high-flying stuff in AEW and you could see some amazing matches, you could see that pretty much on any promotion. You could watch hours and hours and hours of it on YouTube. Why would you dump, in some cases, hundreds of dollars if you're going with a family, you know, 2-3 people in your family? You know, yeah, if you want to wait to the last minute, you'll get some okay tickets for a very reasonable price. But the thing is that, you know, Wembley was a happening. It was a happening. Wrestling fans in the United Kingdom were getting AEW for the first time. It was happening in the 90,000. We brought up concerts. We brought up other performers who perform, musicians, that in the United States may only draw 2,000-3,000 people sometimes, and they draw 30,000 to 40,000 at Wembley. It's a happening. But once that is over, it's back to business again. And it's about perception. You know, and one of the biggest problems with AEW right now is, okay, MJF and Samoa Joe is going to be solid. I don't think anybody out there thinks that MJF is losing the championship anytime soon, but what happens after that? You know, what happens after that? Outside of MJF and Adam Cole doing their thing, what is the most, you know, like, intriguing storyline that you want to see two people kill each other? And please don't tell me Eddie Kingston versus Claudio Castagnoli. Because we've been fed interaction between those two guys for quite some time. You know, Saraya versus Tony Storm is a little bit intriguing, but this pretty much was, you know, came out of nowhere. And then what transpires afterwards? Are we going to get the same of what happened with Jamie Hayter and Britt Baker, where everybody thought that Jamie Hayter was finally going to break away from Britt Baker when they were heels, and then she didn't? And it just kind of fell completely flat. Look at Hikaru Shida. It was, what, a month and a half ago or a month ago, she wins the title. And, you know, it's all emotional. And she was on the first show with this and that. And she's going into All In as the champion, all this. And what has happened since? What has happened since with Hikaru Shida? And you go down the line, you know, and you look at even some people with championships. The fucking House of Black, who had the Trios titles, we were joking about on Monday. Malakai Black is not even in the PWI 500. You know, and listen, AEW is not the only one with this. NXT right now, I am a supporter of NXT for many, 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 many years. I am one of the only people 3+ years ago said that they should have main roster people working NXT. You know, give a little name value, also gives a little bit of a rub to the young guys, and they get to see up close in their same ring what, you know, someone who's made it to the big time, like what they do different. You soak it in. You hang out with them in the back. That is a big boost. Emotionally, it is a big boost for the roster. It's not a demotion. You know, for wrestling fans, some people call it a demotion. You could feel if somebody's demoted. I think Dana Brooke was demoted. I think Baron Corbin was demoted. But, you know, understand, like, what else were they going to do on the main roster? You know, Dana Brooke is, what, going to get squashed by Rhea Ripley? What was Baron Corbin doing? Sometimes you have to be demoted to try to find something else that brings you to a different level. But I've said for several years, you know, when AJ Styles showed up in there and gave a little rub to Grayson Waller, I loved it. When Rey Mysterio showed up, and even with Dom back then, I loved it. And you had others, Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler beats Bron Breakker. Holy shit, how could you do that to Bron Breakker? No, it was a learning experience. It's character development. Just like Becky Lynch beating Tiffany Stratton, it's character development. It's not screwing up the rookies. It's just that people look at it just on the surface. Oh, Carmelo Hayes gets a match on Raw and loses. And people are like, how could you do that to your NXT Heavyweight Champion? What are you talking about? For Carmelo Hayes, that was just an amazing experience, and that is a little taste of what you could have in the future. But right now, if you read between the lines with NXT, Tony D'Angelo and Stax, okay? Obviously, I'm big fans. You know, some of the Italian stuff is a little over the top because it's WWE, and they have to be a little extra careful. But they have had one title defense in 2 months. You know, and even yesterday on NXT, you know, they're showing a segment where they're looking at a bunch of tag teams and they're like, hey, let them all battle it out to see who's going to face us next. And meanwhile, 2 months have gone by and they've had one title defense. You know, I mean, that says a lot. Tiffany Stratton, let's be honest, chasing for the championship felt a lot different than her being the champion. When she did that interview with Busted Open and she said, that, you know, look, I don't think I'm ready for the main roster. I think I need to develop. I think I need to grow. And that was great. And then they put the belt on her, and her biggest feud was Thea Hale. Carmelo Hayes, whether you like it or you don't want to like it, he's been part of the lowest quarters of a lot of NXT episodes since he's been the champion. What is his great feud? Ilya might end up being his best feud as champion, and I personally hope that Ilya beats him for the title at NXT No Mercy. And then you have Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams feud with no titles on the line. Because if Carmelo is still the champion, Trick will lose every match, whether he gets DQ'd or he gets pinned. But if Melo's no longer the champion, even if if Trick cheats or, you know, acts like a chicken shit, he could get a win, and it's a tainted win because of his antics. If he, you know, if Melo's the champion, you can't do that. So outside of that, they don't have women's tag team champions anymore. You look at Gigi Dolan and JC Jane. Once they split, they have been a microcosm, whatever that's called. They've been nothing, almost nothing. JC Jane is shopping. You know what I mean? It's like Gigi Dolan is brawling with like Blair Davenport, and it just feels like random. Roxanne Perez, ever since she lost that title, I mean, she's been good and fun, and she's been solid, but she's not like the focal point of the show. If you actually look at these shows closer, you know, they're trying to, you know, develop some newer stars like Bronco Nima and others, you know, that's fine. But then you get awfully goofy shit like last week with Dijak whipping a tree. I don't care if it's a religious tree. I don't care if it's an ancient tree. I don't care if fucking Jesus Christ cured people under that tree. I don't care if that's where I lost my virginity under that tree. A lot of these segments are just coming off goofy, uninteresting, and you see these big dips many times on NXT. You know, sometimes we give them credit that they can maintain a decent audience all throughout the night. Last week was a great example of it. They maintained most of their audience throughout the whole night on NXT. This time around, though, they had some pretty big peaks and valleys. I'll give you an example. last night, the backstage segment with Trick Williams and Dominic Mysterio, where Dominic was trying to, you know, wise up Trick about Melo. And then you had the first half of Tyler Bate and Butch. They lost 90,000 viewers. Then as Butch versus Tyler Bate heated up, they boosted back up 90,000 viewers from 715 to 844. They maintained that for about 15 minutes. And then Dominic Mysterio and Carmelo Hayes jumped to dominate the entire night with 913,000 viewers. As soon as that match was over, and you had the dopey shit with Joe Gacy and Ava Rain and Trick Williams, it dropped 100,000 viewers. When they did the three-way of Joe Coffey, Duke Hudson, and Nathan Frazier, which did not do that great of a rating earlier, it dropped another 70,000 viewers. And then you finally had the main event of Becky Lynch and Lyra Vicaria versus Kiana James and Tiffany Stratton. That match only did 817,000 viewers. Dominic Mysterio and Carmelo Hayes, and that's Dom. I mean, honestly, most of that is Dom. I mean, there was some intrigue, and some people were still trying to bait people into thinking that it was title versus title, which it wasn't. But, you know, you see sometimes these really big dips. You know, when Becky opened the show, they opened with 842. And as soon as she was done, it dropped 90,000 viewers. 90,000. That is a big deal. They don't have no Big Bang Theory lead in. So, you know, that is of concern. If you take away a little bit of the main roster involvement, you have Carmelo Hayes, who's been pretty much a stagnant champion. Tiffany Stratton, other than Thea Hill, was doing next to nothing. You know, Dom is doing his thing, but if you take away the main roster influence, you don't have women's tag team champions anymore. You know, that's why I think Ilya became my favorite wrestler over the last 6 months. I mean, what he did with Gunther was amazing, but over the last 6 months, he won me over. He is my number one guy. But, you know, NXT is not all about one guy, just like even SmackDown. Even when Roman Reigns is on, it's for a very, you know, small part of the overall show, even if you show highlights of it throughout the 2 hours. But NXT yesterday overall was a fun show. You know, when Becky was teasing the two-on-one match to main event NXT yesterday, we were doing a watch party, and I knew that Lyra Valkyria was going to team up with her. I mean, Lyra Valkyria is next in line. She is the next in line to get the push. I don't know if she'll get to Raquel Rodriguez level that quickly, and I don't think she goes to the main roster right away. I think she will have an NXT Women's Championship run, and trust me, that main roster is so high on Lyra Valkyria. Rhea Ripley already gave her a rub. Becky Lynch, you know, gave her a rub yesterday, and that's going to lead to a match, and they have a long-time friendship, and the company is extremely behind Lyra, and, you know, you think back a year ago, she wasn't even on the radar. But overall, last night's NXT was a lot of fun. Match results, Butch defeated Tyler Bate in a Group A match in the Global Heritage International Tournament. So Butch goes to the finals next week. And remember, the winner of next week goes on to face Noam Dar for the Global Heritage Cup at NXT No Mercy. Early on, Duke Hudson surprisingly beat Joe Coffey in the Group B bracket. And, you know, even though none of us expected Duke Hudson to win, by him doing that, that ended up making a three-way tie in that bracket. And they announced that later on in the night yesterday, the three people who were tied were going to have a match. So Joe Coffey wrestled twice, Duke Hudson wrestled twice, and you had Nathan Frazier. Roxanne Perez beat Lola Vice with a fruit roll-up. And this was one of those where, you know, Lola didn't cheat. Lola didn't get DQ'd. Lola basically was exchanging moves with Roxanne Perez. Roxanne Perez was selling an arm injury during the match, and Roxanne just had a little bit more wit about her and beat Lola, fruit rolled her up. And Lola, afterwards, she's nodding like, yeah, you got me. You know, you got me this time. And Lola Vice, man, I'm telling you, you know, if any of you out there followed my shows a year ago, and we were talking about Tiffany Stratton, keep her on the radar. She's putting it together right before our very eyes. It's pretty special to see how she is adapting. You got to say the same thing about Valerie Lareda. She is nailing it with Lola Vice. And yesterday, the fans were behind Roxanne Perez. I don't want to give that impression they weren't, but there was several points in that match they were chanting for Lola. They have bought in, and she is just really adapting to wrestling. And you could see, she keeps doing it. You know, she is main roster bound in a year and a half. Very possible, very possible. Carmelo Hayes and Dominic Mysterio technically went to a no contest. You know, if you really want to split hairs here, I think Dominic Mysterio technically should have won by disqualification. Ilya Dragunov was at ringside, and Melo inadvertently, even though you could see it was blatant, he inadvertently threw Dominic into Ilya, and then Dominic slaps Ilya, and Ilya just fucking snaps, and he just starts beating the crap out of Dominic, lays him out in the middle of the ring with a shot that, even when you did it in slow-mo, it just looked beautiful. But they officially called it a no contest. Also, other match results yesterday, later on in the night, Joe Coffey beat Duke Hudson and Nathan Frazier in the tiebreaker to go to the finals. So next week, we're going to have Butch versus Joe Coffey, which is going to be a classic. And if anybody was at my watch party yesterday, you could attest to this. We were talking about Joe Coffey early in the night. And Joe Coffey, you know, he's missing that personality and that connection with the fans as far as character development. But he is, you know, a pretty damn good talent. And, you know, I thought, you know, it'd be pretty cool if he actually won this whole thing. But I just have this feeling that we're going to get Butch and NXT No Mercy, the former Pete Dunne, for name value. And that's fine. Remember, Mustafa Ali is taking on Dom and NXT No Mercy. And Becky Lynch has a match, which we'll get into in a moment. Originally, it was supposed to be Becky versus Tiffany Stratton and Kiana James, 2-on-1. Because when Becky opened up the show, she was touting the championship. She was calling NXT and Bex-T. And she was giving props to Tiffany Stratton. Tiffany comes out, you know, reading, you know, the riot act to Becky Lynch. And, you know, she's going to get her rematch and this and that. And then Kiana James attacks Becky Lynch from behind, and Becky ends up fighting them both off, and later, you know, says that she's going to take them on 2-on-1. And again, we knew it was going to lead to a tag match with Lyra, and that's exactly what happened. And in the main event, Becky Lynch and Lyra Vicaria beat Tiffany Stratton and Kiana James, but what was noteworthy afterwards was the fact that Tiffany Stratton attacked Becky Lynch with a chair. And because of that, Becky Lynch announces that at NXT No Mercy, it's going to be an Extreme Rules match for the Women's Championship. Now, my two comments on that, smart decision to do. If you saw Monday's show or heard me talk about it, I showed highlights of Becky Lynch and Tiffany Stratton working the house show circuit for WWE. And Tiffany Stratton is learning on the job for one of the best. And it looked really, really good at times. But I showed highlights. If you watch the match straight through, Tiffany Stratton still has a long way to go. So the fact that they do Extreme Rules means they don't have to focus on all the wrestling moves and the aspect. And that kind of hides a little bit of Tiffany Stratton's inexperience. But her chair shots to Becky yesterday were weak, taking a little bit too long setting up. You know, if you watch Becky as she's getting in position to get hit with the chairs, it did not look good. And it really exposed, you know, you got to really be careful with some of the wrestlers there. We also saw a goofy segment, again, Eddie Thorpe showing up at that tree that Dijak whipped last week with a belt. But, if any consolation came out of it, next week they're doing a strap match between Eddie Thorpe and Dijak. Again, we're going to get Butch and Joe Coffey next week. Trick Williams and Joe Gacy will go at it. And the reason why this came about is, and this is going to lead to news, Trick Williams is in the back. Early in the night, Dom is trying to get some sense through the Trick as far as, you know, being his own guy and, you know, throwing some shade on Carmelo Hayes. Joe Gacy shows up, and he's basically saying to Trick Williams that they have a lot in common and that they have been abandoned, technically. And Joe Gacy proposes Trick Williams to join up with Joe Gacy and Ava Raine. And Trick Williams ain't having none of it. Leads to a match next week. Gigi Dolan last week attacks Blair Davenport. That sets up a match for next week. Bronco Nima and Lucien Price versus Hank Walker and Tank Ledger. I'm assuming this may have to do with, but then again, I wouldn't be surprised if Tony D and Stax don't even defend those tag titles at NXT No Mercy. It kind of feel, and again, you know, they're the champs now for 2 months and they've done shit. It's not their fault. But if you read between the lines, you know, NXT is a lot of smoke and mirrors. You know, they're covering, it's not, I wouldn't say it like that. They're covering up a lot of their weakness with some of the main roster talent. And then you add for next week, Carmelo Hayes and Ilya will sign their contract for NXT No Mercy. A pretty fun show episode, pretty fun episode last night. And, you know, 824,000. Decent number, but it had noticeable peaks and valleys during it. Now, when I said Joe Gacy told Trick Williams that they had a lot more in common than you think and playing off that they were abandoned, Booker T revealed on his podcast earlier this week that James Drake and Zach Gibson, the dyad, the grizzled young veterans, they are done with WWE. If you recall, at NXT Stand and Deliver, their match against Chase University ended up becoming a dark match instead of the main show, which, you know, you look back on it, when they requested their release the same day at Stand and Deliver, I guess part of the punishment was, okay, now you're going to be a dark match. But WWE did not let the grizzled young veterans out of their contract in April. Their contract went up until October of this year, and WWE said, no, we're not letting you out of your contracts. You are staying. And give James Drake and Zach Gibson credit. They only won two matches on NXT TV since they requested their release. And one match was designed for Ava Raine to get the win, you know, put a win under Ava Raine's belt. That might have even been her in-ring debut on NXT TV. And then they beat the Creed brothers in a loser leaves NXT just to have the Creed brothers return. You know, so other than that, they have lost repeatedly. I think they may have won a tag match on Level Up against Hank and Tank. But NXT TV, they never won a match again, other than what I mentioned. And they continued to do their characters. They didn't wing it. They worked as hard as they did before they requested their release. And they won me over a year and a half ago. I mean, early on, I could not stand the grizzled young veterans. To me, you know, James Drake looks more like a stunt double for the Dark Order, you know, and you look at Zach Gibson, to me, it looks like he always was a wannabe Shawn Michaels, like he was dressing up as Shawn Michaels for Halloween. Like, if you look at his face and his hair, he actually kind of looks a lot like Shawn Michaels. But obviously, they don't wrestle like that. But, you know, little by little, they won me over. Imperium. Yeah, everybody loves Imperium. You know, Giovanni Vinci gets a bad break, but everybody that boasts about Imperium, majority of wrestling fans out there think Imperium is awesome. There was a good point in NXT with Ludwig Kaiser and Giovanni Vinci, where they were not over with fans. They were just matter of fact, decent wrestlers, did not have personalities really all that much. And, you know, fans were not, and it clicked. And they ended up winning everybody over. And look how good they are doing on the main roster, even though Vinci is being booked to lose. And we'll see where that goes. But the Grizzled Young Veterans won me over. And, you know, give them credit, too, because I know a lot of you out there, and I agree with most of it, that Ava Rain is not ready for prime time, even for NXT standards. But they embraced her. They actually helped her a lot behind the scenes. And believe me when I tell you, if Ava Rain does any type of an interview in the near future, and she's allowed to talk about it, you will hear her sing the praise of these two guys. They truly... In fact, there's rumors that they may open up some form of a wrestling school down the line. They really just, you know, they were not happy. They were not let out of their contracts back in April. But they just worked and worked and, you know, were fed a lot of shit on a plate. And they just continued to do their job. And they are leaving in a very classy way. Now, if you look at the thumbnail for this episode, I put an AEW backdrop to the thumbnail that they are now Grizzled Free Agents. There's a lot of rumors. And Booker T even kind of hinted to this also, that they could show up in AEW. You know, some people think that they're homesick, they want to go back to the UK. But there are others out there that believe that, you know, they just, you know, the WWE machine and how it ended up is not what they were interested in doing anymore. They work AEW. They'll be able to work indies, more than likely. They will be able to have a much easier schedule. They've been in the United States, so it's not like they have to worry about, you know, residence. But that is part of the reason why they were taken off TV a month early. And that's the smart thing to do for WWE. Even for this, and I'm not trying to demean James Drake and Zach Gibson, but could you imagine if they worked until the last day of their contract and they did an NXT and then the following night on Dynamite they show up in the ring or even on a Collision later that weekend? You know, I mean, it's obviously a much smaller scale, but it looks like that they jumped from WWE to AEW, you know, if they showed up the same week. So WWE taking them off TV a month early, you know, makes you forget about them a little bit. And in this way, if they do show up on AEW television, it's been a month, maybe 2 months. And okay, yeah, they were, you know, they were no longer under contract and they worked out a deal with AEW. And, you know, that's obviously the smart thing to do for WWE standards. But I wish them well. And they won me over. They did a decent job. They wrestled about 80 matches in NXT, give or take a few, and they did not even win half of their matches. When they first came in, they had a nice little run, but then it just went mediocre. Then it went down south a little bit, and then when they were not granted their release in April, you know, as we said earlier, you know, and it's not always about wins or losses, but it is a lot about wins and losses when you're coming up. Because it's perception. You know, when you are winning, even when you look at like Lyra Valkyria, for an example, if she was losing every match, you know, her being a lovable loser is not necessarily going to be her road to championship gold or the main roster. They are given the perception that she is one of the top talents in NXT. And she's got that little rub from Rhea Ripley. She's got that rub right now with Becky Lynch. And I have a feeling that the money match in the very near future could be Becky Lynch versus Lyra Valkyria for that championship. Maybe it's a three-way. Maybe it's a four-way. But I am very intrigued to see if Becky Lynch, I don't want to say pass the torch, but give the ultimate NXT rub to Lyra Valkyria and give it a belt. So we'll see what happens. But outside of that, couple other little tidbits that I wanted to bring up. Tony Khan was interviewed, and, you know, he was asked about CM Punk. He was on Superstar Crossover, and, you know, they asked him what went wrong with CM Punk. Now, I'm not criticizing that podcast, but when you actually think about that question, it is a ridiculously stupid question. How do you even answer that? What went wrong with CM Punk? What are you going to say? He didn't get along with other people on the roster. Other roster didn't get along with him. You know, he had an attitude or that. How do you even answer that? So I don't blame Tony Khan for saying, I really can't comment on that. Where Tony Khan goes really off the rails and it makes him look ridiculous is he does the same formula. And I understand people have to bring up certain topics because they are important topics, but there is a way of wording it. Asking what went wrong with CM Punk, how do you even answer that? Listen, if Tony Khan is completely unchained, what would you expect him to say? To give CM Punk a shit sandwich? You know what I mean? That's going to lead to even more shit being said? Or do you have it, didn't work gel at it? He can't answer that. So why you even ask the question like that makes no sense. But people have to be better prepared, because when they ask a question that they know Tony Khan cannot answer, he always leads to ratings, ticket sales, pay-per-views. And when asked about what went wrong with CM Punk, his exact words, Tony Khan, was, and I quote, "Well, I really can't comment on that, but, you know, I appreciate you asking, but I'm very excited about the things that we're doing. Like I've said, we've been on probably the best run of AEW pay-per-views we've ever had. The TV shows have been really strong. We've had a lot of great matches on both TV and pay-per-view, and it feels like this week it's all really coming together." Every time he is asked a question that you know he cannot answer, he throws that line. Or he'll say, "Tune into Dynamite," or "Tune into Rampage Friday." I hate when people do interviews just for the sake of doing an interview, because they could get somebody on. That's one of the reasons why I didn't do interviews for 20-plus years. You know, I would never try to do a gotcha on anybody, but there's some relevant topics that should be discussed. And, you know, if you can't ask it because the person doesn't want to be challenged, see, that's the thing that people need to understand. I give Tony Khan all the credit in the world. Not just what he said at the beginning of Collision a couple of weeks ago when he announced the termination of CM Punk, but he went to the live audience and, you know, went and said, you know, that a wrestler in their hometown in Chicago was not going to be showing up, and that was CM Punk. And I give Tony Khan all the credit in the world to go out there to those live fans, because he didn't have to do that. But there's a big issue here that happens over and over and over at Tony Khan. Is Tony Khan is verbal. Tony Khan will appear to have the balls to do something that he didn't have to do as long as he is in control. You know, when he goes out there, of course, you know, he's going to hear some boos, but they're there because they're AEW fans at the end of the day. When Tony Khan, you know, starts singing a praise of other people and promises an awesome show and is a boost. You know, Paul Heyman used to do that all the time. Paul Heyman, back in the ECW days, you know, and one of the most infamous ones was when Sabu left ECW around 1995-ish, and he went out there and told the fans. Paul Heyman was very, very open and would talk directly to the fans in the ECW arena about things if he felt that they should know. And he got a lot of respect for that. With Tony Khan, that's a little bit of a Paul Heyman move of what he did, and I commend him for that. But keep in mind, he does things like that because he is in control of the conversation. He is in control of what's being said. You look at these media scrums. You don't think that a lot of these wannabe journalists, aspiring to be journalists, that just want to be in the room, and maybe get the privilege of asking a question. You don't think in advance that they are told, look, don't bring this up. Don't say this. Don't say that. And if you say, oh, I'm not going to bring it up, and you bring it up anyway, you'll get the generic answer like Tony Khan gave to this podcast that I brought up. But then you probably won't be invited back as part of the media for a media scrum. So, you know, back in the day, I didn't do interviews. You know, if I can't ask even some basic questions that should have an answer, I'm not doing it. So, you know, I give credit in some way to Tony Khan for going out there. But as long as he could control the conversation, that's when he does it. Chris Jericho was on Busted Open yesterday. And Chris Jericho was asked bluntly from Bully Ray, is AEW better now than it was a month ago? And Chris Jericho said, yes, absolutely. Now, is that necessarily a shot that, oh, we finally got rid of CM Punk, the cancer, so it's better now than it was before? No, I don't think it's that easy and clear cut. I think it's more of like a lot of, you know, the tension is, you know, out of the air. But I also think because of what went down, I think they had to really not just acknowledge that you cannot have parts of the roster, you know, at each other's throats, that you have to somehow work together as a family. It will never work. I mean, not everybody has to go out and eat together and talk to each other outside of the nights that they're there. But when they're there, they all have to work for the common goal. And I hope that that was a learning experience for AEW. And, you know, there's still a lot of people out there that are just waiting for the next incident to happen. And, you know, when that happens, what do you do from there? You know, Jericho getting paid millions is in a very high position there. He's going to do everything that he has to do to defend that company. You know, and that makes sense. You know, when I had that little spat with Bully Ray many years ago, you know, with Aces and AIDS and when Tito Ortiz debuted and everything, and we were arguing and stuff like that, and, you know, he wanted to do a public confrontation. You know, when I brought up Tito Ortiz, I said, do you honestly think that I expect you to agree about some of the negative, really negative things going on with TNA right now? You know, if Tito Ortiz gets no reaction whatsoever and that's brought up, that you're going to publicly say, hey, you know, hey, it happened. You're not going to trash your company. You're not going to trash who butters your bread. You're not going to trash your boss. You're going to defend your company, and you're going to try to make it appear that the grass is greener than what it actually is. And that's what Jericho does, and he does it well. I just hope deep down inside that AEW has grown because of this. I'm not, you know, friendly with many people behind the scenes there, but for those that I am told that it is a much more fun place to work, you know, than you think. And, you know, yes, some people are underutilized. We don't need to start naming names tonight. But, you know, it is a fun place to work for a lot of people. And as long as the fans are being entertained in some capacity, but at the end of the day, you know, it's going to become an even bigger problem if AEW cannot build their fan base. They have to build their fan base. You know, not everybody stays a wrestling fan. You know, I have a lot of older friends that find out that I'm still podcasting and doing stuff like that. And, you know, not a boatload, but I get enough of them say, holy shit, you're still doing that? Wow, I stopped watching wrestling about 10 years ago. You know, not everybody will always remain a wrestling fan. You know, we're not all diehards for life. And, you know, when you see these spurts, you know, right now SmackDown is drawing almost double of what Raw is drawing. It was not that long ago that people felt that Raw was on a better momentum than SmackDown. You know, but you do get your moments. If the storyline is strong, you will see 2.5 million, close to 3 million fans. You know, but, you know, with AEW, if you stay around 800,000-900,000 and you're not building new fans, sooner or later, some of those fans are going to be like, you know what, you know, I'm still a fan, but, you know, I'll just follow, you know, casually, and if I see something that really catches my eye, I'll go check it out on YouTube. That happens more than you think. So, you know, Tony Khan, with that unbelievable wealth, AEW ain't going out of business anytime soon, not in the distant future. But, you know, there's always the possibility of WarnerMedia saying, look, you know, Tony, we like you. You know, some of the guys there, you know, we get along with them. We're wrestling fans, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's bottom line, and you're not producing the numbers. Bryan Danielson, I feel the most beloved wrestler in AEW. And I also believe that if you had Bryan Danielson and CM Punk side by side and you asked AEW fans in a poll, honest, you have to give an honest answer, no influence on either side of the coin, which one do you prefer more? I think fans dominantly would choose Bryan Danielson. He's on Collision on a weekly basis now. He's out. He's back after a serious injury, and they only drew 467. And that's down from the week prior. So, you know, even Bryan Danielson can't get those numbers past 500,000. Sure, you'll have some nights it'll go over 5, maybe even go over 6. But you're going to get nights where it's going to be 4, maybe under 4. And how much of a leash is WarnerMedia going to say to AEW, look, Saturday night prime time, you know, 500,000 is not cutting it. I truly believe, you know, unless something earth-shattering changes with Collision to just cause controversy and you know, becomes a little bit more must-see TV, I don't think Collision survives WarnerMedia Saturday night, 8 to 10 p.m. throughout 2024. I really don't. I expect a different time slot. I don't know about a different day, because you got to understand there are tickets being sold. There's dates, and they're usually Saturdays, you know, except for a special occasion. So, you know, are you going to record it and then air it on a Sunday? Earlier in it, I don't know. I'm not in that position to answer that. But if they stay on this path, little by little, if you don't gain new fans to offset the fans that you lose, you're out of that. Look at my insurance business, and I think we're going to wrap it up. Look at my insurance business. I've been in business since 1998. And when I first started, I had no customers. And the first year, I think I ended up with about 30 customers, which doesn't sound like a lot, and it's not a lot. But after that first year, those 30 customers, my job was is to try to keep as many of them as possible and get new ones. By the end of 1999, I think I had lost probably 7 or 8 of those customers, but I gained another 25. So at the end of 1999, I'm now up to about 50 customers. And then when you go into 2000, you go in with 50, you want to try to keep all 50, but if you lose even 10 of them, you want to try to get 20. Or at minimum, if you lose 10, you want to get 10 others. If you just start, or you end up with a peak of, let's say, 100 customers, which would be Collision 500,000, let's say, and you don't do anything to try to add to that 100, sooner or later, few of them are going to leave. For whatever reason, they're going to leave. Now you're down to 95. Now you're down to 90. Now you're down to 80. And now you're down to 70. And then it becomes an issue. So not everything is cake and ice cream. For WWE, because of the success of Raw, because of the success of SmackDown, because of the investment in characters, because of the investment in storylines, because of the investment of wrestlers clicking, connecting, interacting with their audience, they have a boatload there that they could just say, hey, who wants to work NXT for the next month? I'll do it. You know, they're getting paid. You know, some, it feels like they're going back to their roots. For some, they don't want to have any part of it. But some actually are willing to do it. That doesn't mean that NXT sucks. But when NXT may not have strong enough names to carry the brand, you know, to a level where they could do a premium live event outside of Florida, you bring someone in here and there, and they have a good time, and it's a little bit more intimate, and you get some fans from Raw and SmackDown to check out NXT for the first time in a long time. And even with my watch party yesterday, there was at least two or three people when I was watching the replay today and I was looking at everybody's comments. I saw somebody by the name of Sam, Rob, and Joey. You know, they all three of them at different parts of last night said, you know what, I didn't watch NXT up until a couple of weeks ago, but you know what, I'm kind of digging some of the wrestlers that are on there. So you bring them in the building, and hopefully there's others that catch people's eyes and they decide to stick around. So, I'm going to jet out here. One correction that I have to acknowledge from last week's Wednesday Night Dynamite. And I have to apologize. And when I'm wrong, I'm wrong. You know, and I have to correct something. I don't take back the story that I told because the story was real and people got a kick out of the story. But last week, I had been given the results of Impact 1000 that was going to be divided across two episodes. Back-to-back week, you know, two consecutive weeks. Unfortunately, the first half of Impact 1000 only drew like 105,000 viewers, which is horrendous. And I'm very disappointed in that number. But I had also mentioned last week that I thought it was pretty cool that Trinity was going to be put in the Impact Hall of Fame. Now, I specifically said, no, not Trinity, the former Naomi. I said the stunt woman. And then I told a personal story involving myself and Trinity. It was a pretty cool story involving cannolis from Chirico's Bakery and everything. But, you know, understand, I was not at Impact 1000. And I specifically brought that up last week that, you know, I was given the results. I gave a non-spoil. I did not give any spoilers. But, you know, this person who gave me the matches who was there wrote down Trinity. So that's why I said it. Literally an hour after I finished the show, I got a DM from my friend who was there, and he's like, oh, man, I really fucked up. I hope you didn't do your show yet. I said, yeah, I'm done. Why? What's up? He's like, I wrote down Trinity. It actually was Tracy Brooks. So I was like, oh, okay. All right. You know, Tracy Brooks, very cool. Going into Impact Hall of Fame, that's fine. I mean, no problem. But I wanted to issue that correction. Because it was not Trinity, you know, from NWA TNA days it was going in. It was Tracy Brooks. So, you know, I apologize for that. The person who gave me the info apologized for that. You know, like I said, it was just honest, you know, typo on this person's part. And Tracy Brooks is definitely deserving going in. She's married to Frankie Kazarian, right? You know, I shouldn't guess. Because I might get something else wrong this week. But I'm going to jet out of here. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I wanted to be more of a conversation this week. And not only that, just make it a little bit shorter than usual. Keep it tight. And, you know, I always believe that good shows is not based on how long they are, but how good the conversation and the topics are. And I thank each and every one of you that has said to me over the past week, DT, I don't know what it is, but you came back from vacation and your shows just feel like they're on a different level. And everybody that said that in different ways has been a compliment. Maybe that 12 days of rest and relaxation just pumped in some, you know, energy to the brain cells. But, you know, I'm glad you're really enjoying everything. And let me know. Give me some feedback as far as, you know, today's episode. You know, if you like this kind of a format, there's no reason why we cannot continue it, you know, not just Wednesdays, but maybe on some other nights as well when we talk about WWE. I don't want to be one of those recap and reviews. I know we do a Raw post show on Monday because everybody's in the Raw frame of mind at 11:05 p.m. on a Monday night, so that's obvious. But we also talk about other topics as well. So for everyone out there, enjoy the rest of your week. Whether you're going to AEW at Arthur Ashe in person or you're watching it on TV, enjoy it as well. I will definitely give a few words about the show on this Saturday's episode of the Don Tony Show. I hope you could join me there. And that's it. You know, leave your feedback. Keep supporting my shows at DonTony.com. Downloading the episodes are free, and that is the lifeline of what I do. That's what keeps me afloat. That's what keeps me relevant when you see all these other places that bring up you know, like podcasts, like, hey, what's a good wrestling show to tune into? Or, you know, what are some of the shows going on today that, you know, have a following? You know, sometimes my numbers get heavily skewed because of YouTube, because of Patreon, and it's not a negative. But, you know, even if you support the video aspects of what I do, DonTony.com, download the audio episodes. You know, it's not padding numbers, but at least it keeps me relevant amongst others out there, because this is not easy to do still in 2023, especially with all of the exaggerations and the clickbait and all the sensationalism. You see what's going on with that LA Times article right now, that Vince could be forced to step down if he gets indicted. And it's like, come on, that piece was strictly designed to get all the anti-Vince people to get, you know, rejuvenated hope that he'll get fried and removed from TKO. That's all that article was. But you see how that has dominated the newswire and the podcast and the discussion the last 24 hours. It's not easy to compete with that. So, you know, your support is the lifeline of what I do. And I thank you for that. And I will catch you all again for your next episode of Wednesday Night Dynamite, 1 week from today, September 27th, 2023. Be well, everybody. Talk to you all again soon. Ciao.
Yes. That was cool. Yeah.